Blog Talk Radio.
So the debate was last night. When I watch the debate, I like to play a drinking game. If anyone is talking, I drink. I'm Brett Singer. This is my show. Hello, hello, hello. Good morning. It is Friday, October 23rd. It is the year 2020, the year that will live in infamy. This is the year. Remember? Everybody's talking about 2020. It's just the worst. And we're here. It is Brett from the Bunker. I am your host, Brett Singer. And joining me today is Gianmarco Ceresi. Gianmarco, how are you?
I'm good. I watched that debate as well. It was very interesting seeing two people. I wouldn't trust to use a stovetop debate the future of our country.
They're not young.
Oh my God. I say old people like Biden because he makes them think someday they could grow up to be president.
That's nice. I think that's sweet.
It's nice. You know, it wasn't as bad as the last debate in terms of just like, oh my gosh. But Biden did a lot of. I noticed whenever he didn't like know what his final point was, he'd be like, "Come on." And I'm like, that's kind of what I do in stand-up when I don't have a punchline. I'm like, come on. It's crazy. There's just no, that's all I got.
Is that the what else is going on of debate topics?
Yeah, or it's just like, oh, it's a sound.
Just big guttural noises.
Yeah.
Now, do you do political comedy?
I've been doing a lot more recently, like, because it just feels like it feels impossible. I think Micah Fox posted that we're like, we're not political comedians, but what else can you talk about? This is in your face. But I think it's hard to be a political comedian, A, because things become dated so fast.
Right.
B, because, like, you have to talk on a very surface level because you're not going to have a bunch of policy wonks in the audience. And I go to Connecticut and you're like, there's a lot of Trump supporters there. And
right.
I have to make a decision like, oh, do I just want to bomb here and get booed off stage? Or am I at a place in my career that I can't just go and piss off every non-liberal audience, even if I do think Trump is bad. It's a tough, we're in a tough time, man.
No, I think that's something that always concerns me. I mean, it's the old, this is a terrible example, but, you know, Michael Jordan saying Republicans buy shoes too, you know, like you don't want to get up there and just have the entire audience hate you because it just turned out that there were a bunch of Trump supporters there. It's just, why would you want that?
I often say I'm the Michael Jordan of stand-up comedy.
I've said that about you.
Very much in the same position. It's, well, also I think with Trump is like, there is this like wrestling aspect to it where I can say a joke. And the moment I just say the word Trump, you'll have some audience members who go like, yeah, and I just don't think
had
that with George Bush. Like there are people who liked him and defended him, but it wasn't that same, like all of a sudden we're at like a wrestling match. And now the flow of the comedy has changed. Now you have to claim your side out loud.
And then the other part of it is that there are people who are going to freeze up as soon as they hear his name. Like I've had jokes that were, you know, they're maybe not the greatest jokes in the world, but they were fine and they seem to go okay. Maybe you try it at an open mic, it seems all right, and then you do it in front of an audience, and the second you say Trump, everybody just locks up. You know, that unless you're doing a Trump impression, I think it's really difficult to pull off a Trump joke. I mean, obviously you can do it, and people certainly do it. But I think it's hard because it's just such a divisive topic.
Yeah, I think I think the tough thing with politics is like when things feel really dire. It's like, well, you should be talking about this, but it's like the people came here. It's the same where like if you went to a restaurant and your waiter started screaming politics to you. Part of you would be like, oh, well, I just wanted to eat. And someone could say, well, it's so dire right now. We all should be talking about it all the time.
Right.
And they're not necessarily wrong. But on the other hand, you're like, I just want to have dinner right now. is right. there anywhere I can go and just put food in my face without
right.
without talking about this?
No,
and
no,
that's
I think
what
that's
it is with stand-up.
Well said.
But I think, like, a really good political comedian is totally within their right to look at someone not talking about politics on stage and being like, you coward. You're not dealing with the world around you right now. So what are you going to do? I'm doing my best.
No, it's a balancing act. And I think it depends on what level you're at and what the audience expects, I think.
Yeah.
But if they're expecting you to do political jokes, obviously that's going to, you know, if you're John Fugelsang, you are there doing probably like a liberal comedy type of thing. And everyone's
sure.
going to expect that. So it makes sense. That's what you do. But if it's not what you do, then I think you're treading and you're you know, it's thin ice. You're taking a risk. And obviously a lot of comedy is a risk and it's not bad to take a risk, but I feel like you got to understand what you're doing.
Or it's just pandering. It's just like, it's very tough because like, especially we're like some liberal comics, if it's a liberal audience, like, wait, so you went on stage to have everyone agree with you?
Yeah.
But also like challenging, also it doesn't feel, I'll poke fun at Biden, but it does feel like I don't need to go up there and like, because obviously I'm a liberal New York Jew. I'm like, I don't need to go up there and like shit on Biden right now. Is this really the time that I need to go up there and like really take it to the liberals? Like 1 week before the election where I do hope Biden wins in a landslide. I don't need to do that right now.
Right.
It's like going home and it's like, oh, Thanksgiving dinner. That's when you're going to confront your dad about being a shitty father. Maybe do it not on his, don't do it on his birthday. Do you have to do it on his birthday? Was that necessary to it?
Yeah, no, that makes sense. That makes sense. That's a good analogy. I like that. I like that. So we have somewhat limited time, and I want to make sure I ask you about The Real Housewives, because that's on your website,
sure.
and I'm fascinated. So you did stand-up on The Real Housewives?
So it was my friend Remy Casimir. It was like a live podcast. Very weird. It was all weird. Very, very fishy. It's like a live podcast recording, but The Real Housewives will be in the audience, and I'm just like, sure, I'll do a set, I'll do a live podcast. And what it was like the Real Housewives were having dinner and drinks, and there's a show, there's a podcast going on, but all the cameras are just crowded around them. So very surreal event where it felt almost like there was a film shoot going on, and I decided to perform stand-up next to the film shoot. You feel like you are... And these are the real hell gigs, like the private gigs you have in your life, where it feels like you are forcing stand-up on them, even though you were asked to attend. So no one was paying attention. Some crew members in the back were kind of laughing. And I could see the whole thing from the beginning. No one was paying attention. And I know this is a nightmare gig. I got stoned, which I don't do before I'm performing. But I think I was like, this is crazy. Let's lean into the craziness of this and get stoned. And I saw no one was paying attention. So I said, you know what? I'm just going to go up there and do like a really loud, extroverted, physical storytelling bit and just try to do something with this. And all I'm so thankful they showed me just little enough that you can't tell that it was like a disaster. I got my 2 seconds of fame, and then they cut to someone else bombing, and that's great. That's the perfect – when you do these kind of reality show things, it's probably not smart to do them. Even the America's Got Talent, because God forbid they cut you off or they edit you in a wrong way. You have no power over it. It goes up on YouTube, and, like, that's the first thing for your name for the rest of your life.
You're the third person to say that to me about AGT. That possibility exists.
I've heard stories about it, and again, like, it can go really well. But you know, Usama Siddiqui was on it recently, and he's a brilliant comedian. And one of the judges, like, decided, and it feels so manufactured on the judge's part, like, decided she was offended at his completely theoretical joke bit, which is actually a feminist bit about how lyrics will, in like a song with a good beat, will be misogynistic, but people will dance to it anyway if the beat's good enough. And she's like, I found that offensive. And all of a sudden there's this fear of like, oh my God, all of a sudden this person, there's articles like they did this sexist joke. And it's so unfair. And I'm sure it worked out in his benefit in that like people saw the clip and saw how talented he was and it gets his name out there. But in that moment, it's just scary. All of a sudden you are now the focus of this machine whose priority is not your success, whose priority is like drama. And that kind of desire for drama can have negative effects on someone's career.
Yeah, I'm actually reading Judy Gold's book, and she said the same thing. She said something very, very similar that, you know, she was talking about like when people record stuff illicitly and how, or a bad reaction to a tweet. I mean, she wasn't necessarily talking about like, you know, an AGT or something, but just that kind of crowd reaction, that, you know, mass internet crowd reaction, and it can really hurt a career.
And I think, I also think like, and especially speaking as like a straight white guy, that sometimes I'm like, all right, I think some of us are being like a little paranoid about, oh, we're going to get canceled. Like we're looking at I never want to name names of people, but we look at people who are canceled and it's like, well, that's an extreme example. Or a lot of these people, you're like, well, they were okay. They got canceled. Someone found an old tweet and it wasn't good and they're okay though. And I certainly don't want to be one of those guys who's just like, yeah, they're all out to get us. It's all tough. But when you deal with reality TV, you know, you're going into it and you have no idea what they're going to do. And in Usama's case, it was just like, it's fortunate that it was a video. And anyone who watches the video, I think of sound mind goes, oh, that's just a really good comic. And no, that he was not calling her a tramp. I don't know if you saw the clip I'm talking about.
No. I've heard about it. I have not watched it yet, but I've heard about it, and it sounds like it was pretty epic.
It's fortunate. Just like, first of all, if it had been in front of a live studio audience, I think it would have been even better because like it would have killed so hard. And like it or not, we are influenced by the fact of, oh, everyone in that room laughed at this thing. Maybe if I'm offended, I should at least be like, oh, why did everyone laugh at it and enjoy it? And I'm being weird about it.
Right.
But, I just want to make clear that it was lucky with his song where it says, like, he's just so good that anyone who watched that video couldn't help but go, like, that's kind of funny. And that's
No. It's not a story being told out of context. It's not something, you know, I heard Osama do this. You can actually see him, Osama rather. You actually see him do it.
Sure. And I think like one of the things we know as performers is sometimes people get in trouble for some kind of joke, and I'm like, oh, well, that's because they're just not great at comedy, or they're not. If you're better at comedy, you can get away with talking about more on-the-line things. And it's like, wait a second, our morality should not be based on someone's talent level. That's kind of fucked up, I think, that it's like, oh, well, they're a little more talented, or they said it in a funnier way so they don't get in trouble for it. This is not a great example anymore, obviously, but like there was stuff that Louis C.K. said back in the day kind of, you know, everything happening, where he would say something that another comedian would get like destroyed for, in trouble for, canceled for, whatever. But because Louis C.K. was so good at saying it and so fucking funny at it, that he would not get in trouble for it. And I think you just understand as a comedian that like, oh, our morality is partially based on who is more talented in their ability to make something funny. And that's not a good gauge for what's right and what's wrong.
You don't think you can get away with more? You're saying you can get away with more if the joke is, the better the joke is.
For sure.
And I mean, I agree with that. But I'm also, I don't know. I feel like maybe you should have to be skilled enough to talk about certain topics. Like some people get up, and obviously this happens. You see this a lot at open mics. You know, there apparently I have not experienced this. People have told me that there's a rampant thing of people white guys going to open mics and using the N-word. And it's sort of like, okay, you know, and they don't know what the hell they're doing. They're just getting up and saying things and trying to get a reaction. And that's not good stand-up.
Sure, no doubt. And I for sure I'm not going to, like, I would not in a million years defend the use of a white guy using the N-word. But I'll say that, like, you see these people going to open mics, and I'm like, oh, this is a – the people who do that or the people who go up there and talk about, like, go up to an open mic, and they're like, I know what I'm going to do. 5 minutes on my view of trans people. I'm like, oh, you're a fucked up 20-year-old kid with no friends and no gauge, and, like, you clearly have misunderstood what comedy is.
Yeah.
And you're just like, you have completely misunderstood, like, what edginess is, and you've taken whatever your Call of Duty scream fight was. Like, my brother, he plays video games, and there's a lot of times I'm like, I get nervous because these guys, they play 4 hours of video games just trying to one-up each other with disses, and they start to think, oh, that's comedy. It's just like just being as vicious and fucked up as you can. And I get nervous. I think he's smart, and I hope I'm a positive influence of being like, hey, don't say that. That's fucked up. But I think that's what happens with a lot of guys in those years. And I think when we look at, like, you know, when people talk about Reddit or 4chan, like, there is a certain age that boys are susceptible to kind of falling into, oh, that's what comedy is. And then you get people, you know, becoming fucking Proud Boys and shit.
Yeah.
Or as Joe Biden said last night, the poor boys.
The poor boys. That was just like, oy vey. killed me.
Oy vey. I mean, look, it was better. Like, when Biden spoke at that first debate, it's very anxious when he stumbles because you're just like, oh, this people are going to take this as a sign of weakness.
I know.
And it can be anxiety inducing sometimes to watch him finish a thought, but he did fine. He said poor boys. Who cares?
I don't think it's that big a deal. I wouldn't even call that a gaffe. It's just sort of like, you know, no, that's not what they're called. It's just, I don't know. It was unfortunate.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, Trump is like, I don't know anything about QAnon. So it's like, all right, well, if you don't know anything about this giant thing, then Biden can forget that it's proud and not poor.
Yeah, exactly. So, you do a lot. You write, you act, and you're like a real actor. Like, you're not just a comedian who acts. Like, you actually have acting training, right?
Yeah, I went to college for musical theater, and yeah, I had a lot of acting training. I really, like, 4 years ago, maybe four and a half, I started stand-up became the priority, and I feel very much like there was a time where if you told me actor would ever not be the first thing in my, you know, my hyphens, I would go, you're crazy. But now acting feels like it's this thing I still kind of do. I don't know if my, like, full skill set is there, if it's rusty. I haven't had, like, a role that required me to, like, really act. But yes, sure. I guess I should be more, yeah.
No. I mean, I think it's, what you say is interesting. I mean, stand-up to me, I mean, it kind of takes over your life. I mean, I'm a couple of years in, It's really all I do. I mean, I spend time writing, I'm doing open mics, and I mean, with the quarantine, I mean, that's really what's kept me sane, is just being able to hop onto multiple open mics a day, do a lot of writing, do a lot of virtual shows. I have my own weekly virtual show that you did. And I think it's fair to say, and I think people maybe don't understand this, that, like, you know, when you do stand up, it can kind of become addictive. I mean, I think it's really, it becomes everything you do.
Yeah. It's just like, well, once you get to a certain level of, like, you're going up there, you're doing well most nights, it feels like, oh, I got to stay sharp. Oh, I can't let this go. If I don't do this for 3 days, I'm going to get worse. Like, for whatever reason, I haven't had just now. I've been, like, swamped figuring out things for this special that's coming out, and, like, you know, something gets moved, something gets this. And I haven't done stand-up not on Zoom for 3 days. And I feel like oh fuck, I'm getting worse. Oh shit. Oh fuck, I haven't written any new stand-up in 3 days. And I think it's a really it's that kind of lifestyle that you commit to, and it can be very stressful.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
You see tons of comedians who break through and they start doing movies and they have a sitcom, and 95% of the time their stand-up just gets bad. It just gets bad. It just gets weak or it gets soft. And there's few people like a John Mulaney that you're like, Jesus Christ, how? That's what's amazing about John Mulaney to me, is it's just like he's been busy. And he had a Broadway show, and he still puts out this hour where you're like, this is well-structured, and these are some great chunks.
Right.
Astounding. And so that's why I'm like, could I – it's one of these things where, like, I do get nervous about, like, my acting skills. But then, you know, in this business, if I sit down for a potential manager, oh, I'm a great actor. You have to – you realize, like, You can be your insecure self in some places, but in some places you need to shut the fuck up with that and
right.
present a front-facing image of like, oh, no, I can do it. I'll do it, and I'll be good. And it's a real balancing act.
Yes, you can send me on that audition, and I will get it. You know, not
yeah,
well, I
yeah,
guess
yeah.
I'm okay. I guess I'm pretty good. I haven't acted in a while.
And the manager's like, oh, well, then fuck you. I don't want you as my client. Wow, no way.
All right, so tell me about the special. Let's talk about that.
Sure. So I wrote a lot of new jokes starting in March. Everything was canceled. I was gonna have my first month where, like, every weekend I was traveling to headline. And I, like, you know, I bought merch. And I was going to sell I wasn't getting paid a lot for these gigs, but with the merch, I think I could break even, maybe make a few a few hundred bucks. And I felt like I was entering kind of a newer level of my stand-up career. And it felt cool. I felt excited. Everything got canceled. Brutal, brutal, brutal. I started doing Zoom shows and then outdoor shows. And I was really committed to, like, writing new material. But a lot of it was more topical than I normally had written before, because it felt like you had to talk about this thing that Trump did, or you had to talk about, you know, a lot of comedians have a bit about masks, and it's like, well, that makes sense. That makes sense, because this is a whole new element of our life. And I had all these jokes that I was proud of, but they were going to expire. They had a shorter shelf life, which is what we called the special. And someone, a producer, was interested in funding it. And we filmed an outdoor, it's a 30-minute special called Shelf Life. We filmed it outdoors at a courtyard in Brooklyn. We did two shows that night. One of them had a lot of rain, but I think
Ooh.
We edited around it pretty well. There's a couple shots you can see the rain, but I hope people are forgiving. And we also, it was filmed, directed by a guy named Andy Buck, who is a documentarian for CNN. And he kind of filmed a little documentary that opens up the special, where you see me just trying to survive with all this, doing the outdoor shows in stand-up New York, doing Zoom shows, doing a show on the street where someone's struggling to parallel park behind me, and I have to incorporate that into my act because it's literally behind me. And we filmed it. I feel really good about it. We're going to air it on Manhattan News Network like 3 times before the election, and then it'll go up on Amazon Prime. Going to be released as an album. We're still it's just the old line. We're talking to people about releasing it, or I'll self-release it. But I feel really good. I realize part of you is like, oh, I want to wait to do that kind of perfect hour where a label asks me to do it from the get-go, and it's the, like, this is me hour. Every comedian has that kind of – a lot of comedians have that first hour of, like, my name's this, and I'm Italian, and my parents are this, and I did this. And I still want to do that, but I think in this crazy fucking time where we don't know what's happening with stand-up comedy – we don't know what winter's going to be like. We don't know what next year's going to be like. I was like, you know what? I feel that I'm a strong enough stand-up to put out 30 minutes that I won't feel embarrassed about in 2 years. And I feel really proud of it. And I'm excited to screen it on Manhattan News Network and then put it up on Amazon and then have it as an album, you know?
That's very cool. That's very cool. I mean, I think, you know, we're in a, it's such a cliche, but I mean, we're in a DIY culture right now. I think we need to do things like that. If you've got the material and you've got the wherewithal to record it, you know, don't wait around for someone to come knocking on your door. Like, just get it out there.
Yeah, it's a wild time. And I started this show business as like an actor, and I was very much of the mindset where you go up the ladder. You know, you meet the agent, and the agent gets to the audition, and then you get enough parts, and then you get the manager, and a very kind of normal trajectory that I think in the 70s, 80s, and 90s was pretty standard. And as we all know, everything's just kind of breaking apart, and there are a few lucky people who make it up the ladder in the traditional way. But we live in a world where Sarah Cooper gets some viral TikToks and, like, knows how to, I mean, the intelligence it takes to take the bump of, like, attention she got and turn it, ride it all the way up into a fucking Netflix special that's
so smart.
Filmed during a pandemic.
So smart.
I mean, sometimes, like, there's people out there who goes, like, I don't get lip sync thing. And I'm like, as a comedian, you admire comedians for their work on one half of you. But I can also admire, and this is not what I'm saying with Sarah Cooper, but I'm talking about, like, any comedian who does The Road or any comedian who, like, you're like, well, that's not my style or my taste. You go, like, but I admire the fuck out of anyone who had the wherewithal to do the insane climb that, I mean, think about it. She went into quarantine not famous and now is huge.
Oh, beyond huge. I mean,
She did this from her apartment.
Exactly. It's a new world.
And I don't know. We're not super close. We knew each other from before. But the idea of, like, do you know what? I can't imagine what it must have been like to go from making TikTok videos on. And she had had success in written books. So she was not inexperienced.
She was not unknown.
But to go from that to then having, I'm sure, like, meetings with the top three agencies in the world and making gigantic career decisions from home is amazing. Is amazing. That is a smart fucking person.
Oh, yeah.
That is a person who knows how to deal with stress. So, mazel to her. And
exactly. More
to,
power to her. I mean, I know there are people that are like, you know, and it's like, come on. Get over it. I mean, she did something really smart. She did something really funny that people liked. And isn't that what it's all about?
And yeah, you just don't, like, it's very easy to talk about, like, you know, we all want to be pure in terms of our output. And again, I'm not saying anything about Sarah Cooper specifically. I'm saying, like, I think whenever you see someone make it, you see them do things where you're like, oh, you went on ABC News and you kind of, like, smiled it up for the camera. Like, it doesn't feel pure. You're like, oh, you went on ABC and didn't make a crazy pedophilia joke because you thought it was funny. And it's like, and I do think that's the struggle. That's the struggle that anyone makes it. You have to decide kind of how much do I let myself fake it. But especially someone like Sarah Cooper, who clearly navigated this insane thing, I can't help but only have just admiration for her abilities.
100%.
I mean, it's fucking, because I know from, like, the little things I do, like I just had some weird cooking. I cooked a meal, posted a picture. It was not a good meal, and it went, like, viral-ish. And I know just the thing of, like, oh, this knife person wants to send me a knife. Am I a branded content person now? And these are tiny decisions that no one's paying attention to that are, I have to figure it out on my own. I
don't
have any landscape. If someone asked me to do a branded content thing, I have no idea, like, is this a good idea? Will people look at this and think it's dumb? am I so small no one really cares and I should just be – it's hard to figure these things out on your own.
Right.
And
yeah,
you know,
no, totally.
What's your sounding board? Your two or three friends that are willing to put up with you whining about the branded content someone wants you to do.
Wah. Somebody liked your tweet too much. Wah.
Yeah, yeah, and you're like, oh, you're stressed about this thing that no one gives a shit about?
All right, John Marco, I know you got to go. So tell everyone where they can find you and how they can find the special.
Yes, so you can find me on social media. This is the best way to find out that everything's going on with the special. It's either my Twitter, Instagram, or TikTok. It's my name. It's at John Marco Cerezi. That's GIANMARCOSORESI. That's where it's going to be. Right now, we found out the special is going to air on Manhattan News Network October 28th at 9:30, October 31st at 10:30, and November 2nd, right before the election at 9:30.
Whoa, look at you.
If you need a little relief. And we wanted to put it out there on that first, and we will announce when Amazon is out, when it's on Spotify. And it's 30 minutes. It's 30 minutes of tight jokes. I promise it's good and you'll enjoy it. So check
great.
It out.
That sounds great. That's a great pitch. All right, John Marco, thank you so much for coming on.
It's great to talk to you. I appreciate it.
Great to talk to you too. And everyone, please stay safe. We'll be back next week.